Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Annotate podcast. Today, we are actually going to be doing something we haven't done in a really long time. I don't know if our listeners remember, probably not, but if you've been around for at least 3 years, we actually had something that we called a spoiler cast on Your Lie in April a while back. And today, we're going to do something a little bit similar to that with the movie Makia, When the Promised Flowers Bloom. So I have some anime connoisseurs accompanying me on my journey today. We have Mori.
Hey guys.
Rockman Dash
12. Greetings.
And Shade.
Heyo.
I was like, I almost paused at Rock. I was like, Rockman Dash 12. Rock. I'm just gonna call you Rock. That's what I always do, anyways.
That's fine. Yeah.
It's short.
So all four of us recently saw Makia in theaters. It had like a limited showing, and hopefully we'll get licensed eventually to come out again, at least maybe in like Blu-ray DVD form would be awesome. So for those of you that have not seen it, though, I just want to talk just really, really briefly about what the story is about before we kind of get into our discussion here. So Makia is about a girl named Makia, or at least Makia is the main character in the story. And so there's a race of people called the, I don't know, how would you pronounce this? Like the Eorf, maybe?
Eorf.
And so they
put an L in the subs, I remember.
Yeah, anyways, I'm just going to say the Eorf or whatever. You guys can pronounce it however you like.
Just
but,
go.
Yeah, go but they so they're a race of people that have very, very long lives, like they live for centuries. And it's kind of like a high fantasy world where there's the regular humans who live a normal lifespan, and you've got these Eorf who they kind of weave like fabrics that tell really long stories of their really long lives. And there is a rule that the Eorf are not supposed to leave their village and fall in love with anyone, because the elder worries that if they were to do that, that they would, as it would become truly alone. And so, because they outlive everyone else. So Makia, the village gets attacked by another kingdom, and Makia finds herself out of the village. She, due to like some accident during that battle, she is far away from the village, and she finds like a little baby. And so the story, the really, really basic story, is kind of her evolving relationship with this child that she essentially adopts as the child grows older and she does not, as well as kind of like this almost like this like really overarching like rise and fall story of this kingdom, like Mizart that invades the Eorf. So all of us here enjoyed the movie, right?
Yes, very.
Yeah.
Yes, so I just really, really brief before we get, now that we've got a little like this story out of the way, how does, just like maybe a couple sentences on your general thoughts about the movie? We can start, let's go backwards on my list here with Shade.
Ew, okay. that was unexpected, but whatever.
Bam, go.
well, yes, I love this film. There's, it does so much, but I'm really trying, struggling.
No, you're good.
But for Mario Kata's directorial debut, I think she did a fantastic job. It's, I imagine it was like quite a different approach to overseeing the film rather than just writing it, because that's what she was before. She was a scriptwriter for everything. She did some pretty good stories. I think like my favorite part is just seeing the ever-changing dynamics between Ariel and Makia as time goes on. Really, really neat. I guess that's mine.
Yeah, that's good. Exactly. That is a very good couple like sentences. I like this show, and this is why. So, what about you, Rock? How you feel?
When I first came out of the theaters, I really wasn't too high on it. But the themes are so rich, and there's so much ideas going on, that like the story grows on you the more you think about it and the more you let it sit on you. It has its issues. It has execution mm-hmm. things that really I watched it. But I think overall it's a really enjoyable movie, one I really liked. And the way I'd like to sum it up is that it's kind of quintessentially Mari Okada, because it captures so much of what she's done in the past while just like adding her character onto it because she's the director of this.
Yeah.
And, like, before she was the writer.
I think I can kind of, based on my time reading your stuff, I can kind of imagine exactly what you meant by that too, in like great detail. But we'll move into that maybe a little bit more later. So what about you, Mori?
Sasuke Mari Okada. So I was crying when the movie ended, and the friend that I went with was crying, and I went to the Ooh. Bathroom, and like a girl from the theater was just sobbing and apologizing for crying so much. And it was hard to think too much about it because my visceral reaction was just kind of overwhelmed with emotion, because mm-hmm. I'm really into just stories that like really hammer in the tragedy of linear time, so I was very in my feelings. But then over the next few days I started realizing just how much more there was, and
mm-hmm.
how there were a lot of cool things that were done with a fantasy setting that you don't see that much, especially in anime. So I'm
yeah.
looking forward to talking about it more with you guys.
Yeah, that was me too.
Yeah, there's so much to talk about with this movie.
There is
so multifaceted.
And I really, so it was funny because that was a very, the scene you described of your theater, Mori, where a lot of people were very emotionally touched at the end. That was exactly in my theater too. They were like, one of my friends is like a hardcore like stalwart who I was seeing the movie with. And then he was like, oh yeah, that was a very good scene. You know, then just like very like, so he was trying to like cover it up, I guess. And then they were like, four guys in front of us, and they were just bawling by the end of the movie.
Same.
And I think that that was my reaction too. Is it was like even just outside of like physical emotions, you know, I was just feeling like emotionally almost like overwhelmed after by the end of that movie. So I was like, oh, wow. And then it really took a while for me to. I had to I was lucky because I got to rewatch the movie actually yesterday, and I was able to like think a little bit more about it, because I was just like, the first time I was watching it, I was like so just like focused on the movie, and then the second time around, I was able to really like think more about things like thematic elements and like stylistic elements that made me actually appreciate it even more in a lot of different ways. So. I know that all three of you mentioned Mari Okada in your really brief feelings about the show. So maybe that's a good starting point. This was Mari Okada's directorial debut, as Shade initially mentioned. But she's like super, she's done all sorts of anime though. So she's definitely not a newcomer to anime.
Yeah.
She's pretty prolific.
Yeah.
And it is weird though, like all of her works are so all over the place, but you can really tell when she does a work just because mm-hmm. of her distinct style she has.
Yeah, for sure. And I know, so like some she's done, like for example, Anohana. Is she?
Oh, you know Asakura.
Yeah.
Hanasaku Iroha.
Yeah.
A ton. Kiznaiver, Sakura, so yeah, just so much.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm probably the least experienced with her of this group.
Oh yeah? Have you
seen... But I've found... I've seen... Well, I'm a big Fujiko Mine fan, but that's kind of the mm-hmm. outlier for her work. And I think... Like, Rock, I think you're kind of the aficionado on... her shows.
I've seen, I think, four or five of them, though, but like some of them I really love. They're like absolutely some of my top 10 favorites, so I do like her stuff. Yeah,
I found it was interesting to me that I loved Makia so much, because as a writer, I find that her shows often don't hit with me. It's like a type of emotional that makes me feel exploited.
I feel like
It's like,
that's, I
oh
feel
ha,
like the
like you
difference.
want me to feel this feeling.
She really
I felt
drives
that kind
things.
of this way
Yeah.
too, but like I feel like that Makia had so much substance behind it that like even though like they were kind of trying to do that, it didn't feel like it because the emotions kind of speak for themselves, don't they?
Yeah, like
Yeah.
there was enough behind it to elicit a lot of sincerity from people.
Yeah, I definitely get where you're coming from with that too, because as someone who is also a relatively large fan of a lot of Mari Okada's works, there definitely have been times where I've seen like I loved Anohana, but I could definitely be like, oh, this is very deliberately being like like this scene was created in this exact way because like she wants me to cry in this scene. Like this is gonna ha this is her very she's very intentionally set this up to do that. So I think the element of emotional manipulation is definitely there. So you said that her series usually don't resonate with you as much, but the movie did. Do you think that that was part of the f a format change that really helped with that, or do you think that maybe Mari Okada's grown as a writer, or I don't know.
I don't know if part of it is that it just worked better being contained to a movie instead of a show. But I don't know, like the core of Makia is kind of so timeless and universal that I think like everyone is kind of bringing their own emotional baggage into it anyway that comes out when you're watching it. So it was like the perfect combination of her usual shtick and I don't know, genuine emotional gravitas. I didn't feel manipulated.
The themes behind it, I guess we could go a bit into that, but they're like family, your parents, growing up, interacting with other people. They're all really relatable stuff. So I think that's the difference. Personally, I actually didn't like that it was a movie. I thought that it'd be better as a TV show.
Yeah, you
Just because I
mentioned
wish
that
that I meant,
before.
yeah.
So,
Because I wish that some of the stuff would have been explored more. Like, so, like, some of the characters didn't really get that much development when you actually think about it. But,
yeah.
like, because of how it handles its themes, that's what I think the big difference is.
So before we get too much into that, though, I also wanted just to double check with Shade with your overall impression of just like Okada's work on this versus like other series. If you're are you a fan of her?
I'd say so. All of the stuff I've watched of hers, I've came out loving it. There wasn't much for me to disagree on. I guess I can see like why Mori or some other people might your emotions get manipulated by her and how the scenes are displayed the way they are, but I don't know. I think for me it's because I don't really go watching things with a critical mindset anymore. I've pretty much long given up that, and I kind of let the work take me under its flow instead, so I kind of get swept up in the entire thing. I guess that's why I'm a lot, I guess I'm usually more positive than people about these kinds of things.
I'm so positive. I'm so sincere. And such a sap. But I guess when you said like let the work take you, something kind of immediately clicked for me. And that right before we started recording, I said I don't like to box myself in with categories, like, oh, now we're gonna talk about the art direction. But the soundtrack and the art direction do that for you immediately. Like it is from the outset like such a sweeping epic setting
Yeah,
that kind of
true.
no matter what you're expecting, you're just kind of instantly rapt.
See, so that I really agree with that. When I so when I was going to see the movie initially, I kind of just decided to go and see it on a whim. I mean, like I was like a fan of Mari Okada, but I'd forgotten that he was even coming, and then like Facebook served me some ad about it the day before, and I was like, oh yeah, this I'll go see that, I guess, you know. And but I got really excited, I guess, at maybe, I think it was maybe the 10-minute mark, like when Makia has been, she's like left the village, and there's like the drat, there's kind of, there's a few moments where you can find and really feel the how large and like alive the world is, I guess, at that moment. And I was like super excited. I was like, holy crap, this movie is has like a is has a really cool setting.
And yeah, and it really does works just killing it with the presentation of how to represent the world. The music was like it was so fitting, like because it really captured the premise and the world so well that it's hard not to get swept in it.
Yeah.
I think a little bit is also, even if you don't immediately realize it's him, the character designs being Akihiko Yoshida of like Final Fantasy Tactics and Bravely Default fame, it kind of immediately puts you in the mindset of like, this is going to be an amazing fantasy journey.
Yeah, I actually was not aware of who did the character designs, but that makes a lot of sense now that you've said it.
It
It's
really
those
does.
cute little noseless faces.
Yeah. That's exactly what I was thinking.
I just like their simplicity, though. It's pretty charming.
Yeah. But then, like, they're also outside of like the character designs, though, like the backgrounds in the show, some of
Oh,
them are
are
just
amazing,
incredible. Yeah.
That's PA works. Every time, even if the show's garbage, like every time they kill it with the backgrounds, it's like it's the reason PA Works is my either favorite or second favorite studio is just because the backgrounds are all just so jaw-dropping and so amazing.
Wait, just out
Every
of
time.
curiosity, who is their competitor in your favorites? It's like Kyoto Animation.
Ufotable.
Ah, I try.
Ufotable,
Yep, makes
usually.
sense.
Madhouse though. That's also another.
Yeah, makes sense. Worthy list, worthy list. Kyoto Animation should be higher, but I respect it. But yeah, I think too. So for me personally, I'm a really big fan of when like theme songs of shows are good, and I just want to get off my chest real quick here. The theme for Makia is an awesome song. I love it.
I'm
I'm
the
sorry.
credits song.
Yeah. The song that plays at the credits.
God damn it! I'm crying right now. I'm sorry. It was so emotional, and I loved it.
It's definitely one of the songs that, at least for me, makes me want to listen to it like in loop for like 2 days.
I actually have done that. It's one of those songs that you like re or at least you that I for at least for me personally, like late at night I'll listen to more like softer kind of music, and there are sometimes like over the past few weeks after I've seen it where I've been in the mood where I'll just like set it on loop for a little bit and like sit back in my chair and be like, ah, oh, yes, Makia. Ah, oh, yes, very excellent movie. And I it sounds ridiculous, but I'm not kidding. I've like actually done that. So laugh all you want, guys, okay? It's real.
I can totally see that.
I wasn't as into the theme song, but I loved the score in general. I can't hum it or kind of conjure it off the top of my head, but there was sort of a, like a main leitmotif that went throughout the movie that I thought was really beautiful.
Yeah, I'm definitely on the hunt for that OST.
I really want to buy that
I say
sometime.
it's amazing. I feel like they really killed the other world we feel with the soundtrack because a lot of times scores can, you know, a lot of times if they use like modern music like J-pops and stuff in like fantasy settings, it can really take you out of it. But the music here really felt otherworldly, and I love that about it.
I'm gonna make a Makia AMV to Time Flyers.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So, to go back actually though to one of your earlier comments, Rock, you mentioned that, and this is jumping a little bit away from the art direction now, changing gears. So you briefly mentioned that you felt that some of the characters weren't as developed as you would have liked, which is one of the reasons why you thought it might have made a good TV show. It would have given them more time to develop the characters. So did you want to please elaborate a little bit on that? Because I kind of want to get into that kind of discussion a bit.
Okay, yeah. So I guess I have two general complaints about the length of the movie. Mm-hmm. So first of all, the Makia spans the entire lifespan of a person. So to do that, it had 4 time skips.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like each time skip wasn't long enough. So like we didn't see enough from each stage. So it was hard to really get how they moved. I mean, in the later on ones, it was pretty easy to see how like the characters would develop. But sometimes, at least early on, that felt like I didn't really see any development. And Makia, the character, for me, was my biggest gripe. She got development in terms of like thematics, I feel. Instead of like personality and character. Because she grew a lot throughout the film, but mm-hmm. her personality was so bland. At least that was my biggest thing, was Makia is not a very interesting character when you think about it. She, like, her whole character is defined about how she is a mother, which, like, for themes, that works super well. But as a character, it's so dull. And Isho, to see Ariel, which is the son, to see Ariel develop much further, to see Makia get more screen time, to see some other of the supporting cast get more screen time and more development, I would have loved that. And I think that if it was like a 24-episode TV show, that could have happened. But it's a 2-hour movie, and it is what it is.
Hmm. How do you guys feel about the characters? You feel like they were developed enough or not enough?
I can see Rock's point. It was paced well for a movie. 2 hours, that's a lot of time. So much to cover. I think it did good for, and I would actually like to see a full TV series of this. I think it could use it. Characters? Well, I guess, Makia, it's like Rock's point, but I still like that Makia's, I guess what Rock said was more in thematics, how she, I guess she mm-hmm. grows as a mother. I think that's what I like most about Makia's character, though, and also because even though, like, I'm not be that role at all, that her struggles were very relatable, I think. And mm-hmm. I think Okada really highlighted those struggles in a way that people could understand and see, okay, this is actually pretty tough.
Hmm. Yeah. I definitely, so on the point that Makia feels very relatable, as someone who is not a mother, I still definitely agree that even though I'm not in necessarily Makia's position, that I felt a certain kind of attachment to her struggle. And I think that Okada did a really good job of, and this is my point, I think that Okada did a really good job of creating a character that would allow me to do that. I think that there are my position is that I don't necessarily disagree with you, Rock, in the sense that like more development could be good. It might have made the characters even better. But from my standpoint, I felt like I feel like it's that Makia is not just defined by her relationship with motherhood. And I think that there's a lot of showing, that there's a lot of, you know, it's one of those showing, not telling things where different people are going to pull different things. But I saw Makia not just having a struggle with her relationship with Ariel and motherhood, but having a struggle with her relationship with her own people and with just the concept of relationships in general and the passing of time. And I think that the complexity of her struggles in that regards, I think she did develop significantly. And even though there was never like a big point in time where she's like, I've developed in like these ways, and just like so blatantly shows it that you can't disagree with it, I do think that there is a lot of subtle ways that she's developed in the movie that really make her a more complex character than she seems on the surface. And I mean, obviously this is just my personal opinion on that matter, but I just don't think that she's limited to just this relationship of motherhood and her relationship with Ariel. I think it goes a lot deeper than that.
I do get what you're saying. Like, a bit of it is that my complaints really don't matter, because the Makia isn't really about the story. So it's way more about like the themes and stuff, and seeing Makia develop in these subtle ways. And I didn't mention it earlier, but it's also kind of a she's relatable, because it's not just a mother thing, it's also a coming of age. Mm-hmm. Because she was a kid when she left, and she had to grow up throughout the movie. So it's also like a coming of age. And because of all of this, honestly, you might seem like and could be considered really minor, but that did impact how I saw the film, and it impacted how I experienced it.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Mori?
I'll agree that in a vacuum, Makia as a character is not one that jumps out at me or makes me feel super seen. I didn't have a problem with her. Something that's kind of essential to why I loved this movie so much is because I'm the only person in this group that has the option of ever being a mother. And it's like I'm kind of at the age where even if you think that you're super decided on that, you end up thinking about it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the few stories that kind of made me very empathetic to the experience of motherhood. It's very hard to do with me.
Mm-hmm.
So even like in less deft hands, it could have just been super schmaltzy, like, oh, just look at the sacred sacrifice of mothers. But I also think it was sort of a story about, like, do you remember the Hedgehog's Dilemma from Ava?
Yeah.
Like, the big struggle.
If you get close to people, then you can hurt them.
Yeah, so I think even though she's a very demure character, you can sort of see Makia as being a radical. Like, she spends her whole life in the movie, and it's implied at the end that she's going to keep doing this, like,
mm-hmm.
defying everything she was taught when she was living with the Yorf, and deciding that, like, no, even though I'm going to have to keep going through the pain of losing people I love because she has such a long lifespan, she decides that it is worth it to mm-hmm. keep forming connections. So I think she's a very kind of deceptively strong character.
Yeah, I can definitely
really
see that.
I also really liked Lilia, and I know, Rock, you have feelings about her, too.
I really like her as a character. I really wish she had more screen time. I wrote a whole article about this, so, like, go check that out if you're interested in my thoughts. Because if I rattled on about that, we'd be here for 3 hours.
And but, I think that Makia is a more interesting character because Lilia is around, and
yes.
vice versa. Like,
yes.
You need them.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, one of the points that I had wanted to make is one of the reasons why the movie really worked for me personally is so There's I kind of like the way that the focus of the story, in like if you were to say one relationship that is the most core one, is obviously Makia and Ariel. But the relationship between Makia and Ariel, even though it's kind of like you're looking at this like very tightly knit story that's going on, there's also this like overarching story about like this rise and fall of this kingdom. And like within that story, there's Layla and Krim, and like Layla and the way that she is similar and contrasting to Makia, I think is something that like they almost like those stories play off each other, even as they're happening like concurrently. And I think like having both of them was a strength of the movie, in my opinion.
Yeah, and they both become very attached to the idea of motherhood for very different reasons.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's just like, it's incredible how Makia manages. Like, when you think a movie has multiple storylines going on at the same time, you'd think that it'd be a disaster. That a work couldn't manage to do that. And, like, there are parts where it feels like, at least for me, that it wasn't perfectly seamless, obviously. Mm-hmm. But the way they captured the themes, the way they executed in general, they really, both of them interweaved and had their own strengths, and they really shined.
Yeah. And I think one of the complaints that I've heard from people about the movie has been that they felt that Makia's relationship with motherhood or whatever would take the back seat sometimes to the other story. And so I guess in some ways, A, if you're more interested in one of those versus the others, that might bother you, or at times when it's not as seamless of a transition, that might bother you. But I think what really worked for me was that they tied together really well, in my opinion. And there was kind of this idea of as Makia is progressing through her life and Ariel's progressing through his life, there's like overarching like events that are occurring that are directly tied to them, that then they get swept up in those. And that's something that really, like the way that the stories like interacted, I think was done really well.
I also think that as an ensemble cast, it's really effective, because I realized part of this just now. Like, there's a real theme of, like, the attachments, the connections you end up forming out of necessity.
Mm-hmm.
Which is true in different ways for, I think, Makia, Ariel, Lilia, and Krim as sort of this total contrast, like, isolationist character.
Yeah.
But I think, like, Lilia being trapped in this country that she's held hostage in and feeling abandoned, and sort of because of that feeling like the only thing she has to turn to is her role of a mother, I felt like it was kind of similar to when the war breaks out near the end of the movie and Ariel kind of admits, like, yeah, I joined the army in this country to just throw myself into something.
Mm-hmm.
But now, like, it's where I had my career, like, it's where I'm about to raise a family, I'm attached to it now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I really liked that contrast that Krim had to the others. I thought that the scene towards the end where Lelia is, like, Krim's like, all right, come on, let's get out of here. We can finally escape. And then Layla's like, I would really like to see my daughter. And then Krim just like totally loses it, right? Because for him, he's spent all this time, like he's made no connections over this time. He spent all this time trying to get back what he had lost so many years before. And then I think that's one of the points of, it's one of the points of friction between him and Makia, is that she's got this relationship with Ariel, and then Krim has, I think in some ways, is jealous of that. And then, but now Lelia, who he expects to be like super happy that he's here to rescue her, and she's not, and she wants to see someone else. I just think that like totally breaks him. And in a lot of ways, that was one of the most emotional scenes for me. Was because I could just see him like utterly crushed by that, and he's just like, let's just end it all here then.
Machia as a movie, Oh no, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Like he's the one that's he's not willing to accept that mm-hmm. all these years passed and things aren't exactly the way that he left.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, Machia has a really interesting like relationship with time. So like Krim is obsessed with the past. Machia lives and Lelia kind of is the future. Like is looking forward to like all the different things and is obsessed with what will happen in the future. Well, I mean kind of, not really, but like the work has such an interesting relationship with time that like the mm-hmm. inclusion of Krim as a character was definitely necessary for it to do what it needed to do. And I really love mm-hmm. how they handled Krim as a character.
I agree.
How everyone was moving on without him. It's so such a powerful statement to have in a movie.
Yeah, I think another big part of the movie was people changing over time. Like people, I think a lot of the characters went in like the opposite direction that they would have wanted to go in life. Like, I don't know if I worded that right, but I think this holds true for Lelia. I don't know if she really wanted to become a mother, but she learned that she cares about her daughter.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I get where you're coming from, yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of streaks of, like, tragic irony in this movie
mm-hmm.
with the choices that characters make, and I kind of think that Krim, more than anyone, like, acts like a human.
See that?
Like the Eorf have such long lives, and they're kind of supposed to go with the flow more and not be so attached.
Yeah.
But Krim is the one that kind of has this very, like, tragic human flaw of not letting things go.
Mm-hmm.
And you also see that in, I was thinking about just the country of Mizart in general. Mm-hmm. Is so attached to, we need to harness this mythic power because they captured the Eorf and they also have the dragons.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, now we hold two sources of ancient power. And they're also very attached to, like, these things that are magical and ancient, never changing.
Mm-hmm.
But then when they do force Lelia to have a child and she as in the daughter doesn't seem to have magical blood, they're so upset, and they get so upset, like, in the same scene that the king is like, oh, and also the prince is bored with Lelia as a partner, please find him another woman. So mm-hmm. it's like they say that they want this freakish longevity, but they can't even handle, like, the boredom of their extremely average lifespans.
I think it's also interesting too how ultimately those kind of attachments end up being people's downfalls. I mean, obviously in the case of Krim, he just, like, totally can't, he doesn't move on, and because of that he just lives a very, very sad existence. But in the same way, like, Mezart ends, it obtains these powers, but ultimately it having those and abusing them is what ends up resulting in every other kingdom teaming up and destroying it in the end. It's their own downfall, you know?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of nobility from human characters. There's a lot of pride and vulnerability in the Eorf characters, and I think ultimately one of the simplest but most true things the movie's trying to say is that, like, everyone screws up and falls in love and has the same connections as everybody else.
Yeah.
Whether you live for 30 years or, I don't know, 1,000 years, however long they live.
Yeah, they never exactly said, but it was, like, definitely, like, sent. I think they said the elder was at least 400 years old or something like that.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Okay, so speaking of human connections, please tell me what you think about this.
Okay.
Was it, because the friend that I went to the movie with agreed with me. Was it just me? Or were they hinting at the end that half Eorf merchant was the Elder's kid?
Yeah, okay. I thought the exact same thing.
That.
Yes. That's exactly what I was after my. I wasn't sure at first, but at my when I watched it the second time, I was like, this. I was like, this. I think that he is the Elder's kid, and she made that rule because of some.
Yeah, it's like, she got her heart broken.
Uh huh.
That makes a lot of sense.
I was thinking the exact same thing.
It really does, but I never would have thought about that myself.
Yeah, I'd have to watch it a second time. I think I've forgotten the details.
Yeah, I needed the second time for sure. The first time I was like, I was thinking, oh, maybe this is the case. And the second time I watched, I'm like, oh, this is totally, because I thought that towards the end of the movie. But then when I watched the second time, I was kind of like viewing that character and the elder's character under the lens of maybe this is a thing. And then I was like, even from the beginning, I was like, oh yeah, you know what? They're definitely hinting at that.
Yeah.
I kind of liked him too. I liked how he was, he kind of flitted in and out a little bit. When Machia, when they were originally trying to rescue Lelia during the parade, the wedding parade, and he's just kind of like suddenly in the tent with Machia, I kind of I laughed internally slightly when he suddenly appeared. I was like, oh, this guy, he's back.
Yeah, he was charming.
Yeah.
I really liked him. He was pretty minor, but like it added to like the feeling that the world was real. And he was a fun character to watch. Yeah.
Yeah, he was pretty laid back about everything.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Like when he's in the tent and Machia, this is the first tent where Machia discovers the dead parents and then Ariel, and she's like, I'm gonna take this kid. He's kind of like sitting there. He's like, oh, well, looks like one lonely person found another lonely person. And he just kind of like takes a swig of his bottle and leaves.
He's the Greek chorus of the movie.
yeah. That's a really good way to put it. I'm going back slightly to when we were talking about Krim. He kind of I really liked the point where it was right after they'd attempted to rescue Lelia, I think, and then they'd failed and Krim was like really bummed about it, and he comments that he thinks it's ridiculous that Machia has this relationship with this kid, because even though she knows that the kid is going to die before her anyways. And the second time watching it, I kind of thought about that as opposed to the scene earlier in the movie where even though humans live for a way shorter time than the Eorf do, there was when she lived with that family and they had that dog. And the dog, obviously, it's just like us in real life, right? Like, dogs live way shorter lifespans than we do, and their dog passes away. And they kind of have to come to terms with that a little bit. And I was like, I'm kind of rambling here, I guess, but I really wanted to bring up the dog. Because I was kind of thinking, like, wow, this is... Because, you know, it's one of those things where we don't live for centuries. And so... But even though we don't live for centuries, I can really identify with that kind of struggle of, like, you know, the worry of you form a relationship and then you worry that they're going to die off before you. I mean, I have a dog that I care about and she's getting old, and that's inevitably going to happen in the next few years. And so I was able to really identify with that portion. Even though I don't live for centuries, it happens on a more micro level of I live for at max a century and my pet lives for at max a decade plus a couple years.
Yeah. I mean, I think the first time I cried in the movie was the dog scene where Machia and I don't remember his name, like the older
Lang.
The older child that
Lang.
When they just kind of ran off and cried at each other about mortality.
Mm-hmm. Dude, that got me too.
Even though Machia is not human, I feel like they were experiencing the same thing in that moment, because you have to think if the Eorf live for centuries, like, they don't, if they stay sequestered, they don't have to confront mortality mm-hmm. in the way of, like, their friends and family dying. So I feel yeah. like in an, as a coming-of-age movie, that was sort of her moment, like, that a normal child or teen would have of realizing, like, what it means to see something die.
Mm-hmm. I remember feeling really, it was really crushing, too, because, I mean, she was sad that the dog had died, but she was, it really made her dwell on the fact, like, I think it was Ariel's, like, oh, does everyone die? And then Mother's like, yes, everyone dies. And I was just like, oh, she's, because, you know, the dog has died, she's sad about that, and now she's thinking, oh, all these other people who are here with me sad that the dog died are also going to die, and I'm still going to be here.
And do you think that that's the main reason that she turned Lane down later?
Yeah, I, so...
Just to, like, sort of spare them both that.
I was always... Yeah. I was really wondering about that, too. And I do think that that was part of it. Because I think... And I think that it was less, though... to me, it was less that she was afraid of Lang dying, and more like you kind of said there, that it, of how it's a two-way street, like he would know that he'd be leaving her behind, and she didn't want to cut, like, and she said, I don't want to cause any trouble. She wasn't just referring to, like, staying at his mom's house. I think you're right. I think she was also kind of referring to the fact that if she were to have a deeper relationship with them, he would leave her behind, but then he would know that he's leaving her behind and be unable to do anything about it, and that could release cause some anguish for him.
Yeah. And do you think, so I was, this is like the dumb question I had about this movie. It's mm-hmm. at the very end, I was like, you know, like, Maki didn't really need to run off for,
oh, yeah.
for most of the rest of Ariel's life, but I realized
mm-hmm.
she was kind of saving her granddaughter, like the experience of getting really, really close to this grandmother she couldn't understand,
mm-hmm.
and having to sort of raise another person through life and death.
Yeah, I so it's funny because
but the when, way mm-hmm, the way ahead. I oh sorry go ahead
no it's all you, man, go.
the way I saw it, at least, was that but Makia saw his own life and wanted to let Ariel and his partner live it through as, like, they wanted to. So that's like, and that's how I saw it, at least. Plus, like, it's not like she wasn't doing anything else. It was like she was kind of rebuilding the, like, the village that they had, the Eolf have, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I can see that.
Yeah, I guess my thought on it, and I it was funny because I had been talking with some people about it too, and I was like really thinking, and like I was the first time I watched it, I was like and then the second time, one thing that I kind of felt too is that I think that was definitely part of it, and I also think that part of it is Makia's like, you know what, I've raised this kid, and he's an adult now, and he has his own family, and I want him to not have to focus, you know, I'll do my own thing. I want him to focus on his family, and because I think, what was it, the scene, I'm trying to remember, there was one point where she kind of, where they have a line where it's like, this child, you know, I want to raise this child to go on, it was his wife, I forget Ariel's wife's name.
Dita,
yeah, thank
Dita.
You. Dita, she's like, I want to raise, I'm probably misremembering. Anyways, it doesn't matter, I'm going off on a tangent now, but I definitely think that part of it is that she wanted him to be able to focus on raising his family and his relationships with them.
Yeah.
Tangential to this sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
when Lelia was rescued at the end and she yelled out to her daughter, like, don't worry, I'll forget all about this.
Oh, yeah.
No, she's not going to forget all about this. She's absolutely not going to forget. It's And I think she knew that, like, her child, her human child, has a better chance of moving on and filing that away, just kind of as this, like, weird, tragic phase of her early childhood.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Lelia was realizing in that moment that even though she did get out of this place where she was held captive, like, that attachment is something that she's going to hold on to for the rest of her life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. At the same time, that moment was a bit of growth for Lelia. It's interesting how we throughout the film we see Makia like learn all these life lessons and stuff, but Lelia kind of just learns it all at once, and she realizes, at least to her, that like she thinks, at least Lelia's thought at the time was that like her existence to Medmel, the kid, would mm-hmm. be like kind of just nothing but pain. So like for both of them, she wants to like segment this existence out of like everyone's thoughts, but ultimately everyone knows that that's not possible. It's a part of their life and wants to segment it off. Yeah, it's like you said, she realizes that, yeah, she's never going to be able to.
Yeah. And I think she's trying to do her, you know, her daughter a favor too, because she's like, I'm going to forget about this, so you should too. And she's hoping that her daughter will forget about it, even if she herself will not. There was, so I actually, on the subject of Lelia and her daughter, I was just curious, how did you guys feel about the what is, I don't know his name, but kind of like that the leader of the army, the guy who was like the king's right hand man?
The one that was clearly in love with her.
I guess I could talk about it. I liked him as a character, but like ultimately he's kind of pretty side character-y, so like he doesn't really get much mm-hmm. development at all. But yeah, he's kind of also a tragic figure too. Everyone in Mizart is kind of a tragic figure in some way. But like he wants to help and like protect and like do all these things with Alien, but ultimately he can't because, you know, his job is to be like a captain or whatever of this country. And he puts the country first, but like you can see in his reactions that he wished he did.
I mean, I like that he is a complicated character, but not, you know, an 100% redeemed character, because Lelia had a point when she was like, oh, you're sorry, you killed all my friends in front of me and invaded my. Like, the bad stuff he did was pretty bad.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that it didn't end with, like, I don't know, them falling in love or him being portrayed as this 100% good guy. Like, he kind of, he saved her life for him. He made it possible for her to get away, and that was sort of it. Like, he did what he could and stepped back, and I think that was a good place to leave him at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always, so for me, what interested me with him was there was this element of he was totally at fault, and at the same time, you could see that, like, his internal thought process is that he's bound in service, and so he's doing all these bad things that have bad consequences for people he knows, but he's doing it anyways because he's like, you know, and he justifies it internally as, like, it's something he has to do. But he is still, but he's still, even though he's thinking that he has to, he's justifying things as he has to do all these things, he also knows that they're horrible, and I think that that's kind of crushing for him. Like, I know that, right, as time goes by, people are aging, but I thought it was interesting for the guard captain, the way that he aged was, it was mostly like he just looked a lot more sullen and sad by the end of the movie than he did. He looked really young and, you know, just, I mean, it's not that he was like super lively and like happy, but he didn't look like he had as many things weighing down his heart, I guess, to put it one way, as he did at the end of the movie.
That makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting that, like, his reactions, at least, really do mirror the country of Mozart's pretty well. Is that, like, everything's kind of on a decline, but, like, at the beginning, they're all, like, gung-ho and expansion and stuff. So, like, everyone, like his reactions reflect so much things about the movie. Man, this movie is so multifaceted. There's so many good things about it. Like, yeah.
I was thinking... Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was thinking earlier that there are a lot of fantasy stories with, like, dragons and elves, or... And, I mean, the Eorf in some ways are sort of like the Rings elves. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of fantasy stories where they exist, but we're usually seeing things from the perspective of a normal, at least human, character.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see media that much that puts you in the point of view, like, of this kind of otherworldly being. And I thought that the world building did a really good job of making you think about all the ways in which it would be very hard to be this, like, incredibly long-lived superhuman thing functioning in the world.
Agreed.
Same with the dragons. Like, it was a kind of refreshing, like, I mean, obviously not realistic, but I think you know what I mean. Take on, like, what would it be like if a country actually had dragons?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this goes a lot with how Machia does. Oh, Machia! It goes along with how Machia is a Mario Kata style film, in that, like, most fantasy stories are focused on, you know, the story, but Machia isn't. It doesn't care. Like, it has these interweaving plots, mostly as, like, flavor text to, like, the themes that the show has. And it's refreshing to see a fantasy story that's about, you know, human, like, emotion, what it means to be a mother, to be growing up, or your relationship with time. All of this is absolutely, like, it's refreshing. I think that's a great way to say what this movie is, because there's nothing really like it. There's almost no high fantasy thing that is about, that's relatable. It's all these Lord of the Rings, we need to go to this mountain and throw this ring, you know, this, it's all story substance. And the fact that this wasn't a big reason it's so endearing to so many people.
Yeah, it's pretty grounded for a fantasy film, I would say. Like, that's why it's so relatable to a lot of people, I would think.
Yeah. When you guys have been saying that you want it to be a show, I kind of want it to be a novel.
That would also work, I think.
I can see that.
So, actually, on the set, so in my, for me personally, I actually did like it as a movie, and I think personally I would prefer it as a movie. And so the reason is, I think that the primary reason why you guys and why other people I've heard have wanted it as a show is because you wanted more development in certain areas and felt that there could have been more development in certain areas that would have improved it, and therefore a show would have been better. And for me, I mean, I didn't feel like it was lacking as much in those ways that some other people felt. And to me, I thought that, I think that one of the points of critique I've heard some people say that that the world building distracts too much from Machia and her relationship with Ariel and the theme of motherhood. I've heard other people say, oh, this world building's super cool, but it doesn't jive that great with the Machia. You know, I want to see all the world building. I think what it comes down to is, right, people who want this who only want a high fantasy film, or people who only want to explore this motherhood relationship, are going to be disappointed because the movie chooses not to just do one or the other. It's doing both at the same time. It's doing a lot of things at the same time. And to me, it's not that that doing all those things detracted, like different, like it's like, oh, having all these other things going on detracted from this, the theme of motherhood. The way I see it is more that all of these things happening at once built on each other and made it stronger. And because it was a 2-hour movie, it was tighter than the plot and pacing was tighter than a TV show would have been. And I think that that was the right way to go with this story personally.
Yeah.
See that?
I can see that. Yeah. I can really see that. And with I was going to say something, but I totally blanked.
Sorry. Is it gone? All right, we could maybe like keep going, and then if it comes up, you can just be like, oh, by the way, I remembered, guys. That's totally fine.
One of my notes that there's no great place to file, so I can just say it, is that the end of this movie had one of my personal pieces of kryptonite in anime, which is like emotionally loaded use of Tadaima.
Oh, yeah.
that just screwed me right up.
The final scene, that wrecked hard.
It kept building on itself.
Yeah, yeah. It's especially because they had used that previously in the movie as, like, emotional parts where they would say, you know, like, when Ariel was going out to work at one point, he was like, I'm going to go get this job as a soldier. And he was like leaving for at least a very long time. He was like, itdekimasu. And then, yes, they've been using this already throughout the movie. And then at the very final time that she visits and they pull it out again. And it's like already, not only is it just there on the spot so crazy, but it's like it'd been building up too. So I was like, oh my God.
I didn't know, like, when they flew off on the dragon, Makiya and Lilia, for a second I thought it was going to end there.
Oh, yeah.
But then I was like, oh no, like, of course, we're going to have to do the death scene. We're not going to be spared from that.
How did you guys, would you have preferred that it ended with them flying off, or were you glad that they had the death scene?
No, I am glad it ended where it did. It was really the perfect resolution.
Mm-hmm.
It bookended the movie.
Yeah.
It captured all the themes perfectly in this one moment, and I don't think I would have walked out of Makiya thinking about so many of the themes if it didn't bookend it like it did. So, like, yeah, I'm totally on the boat of, I'm really glad it ended the way it did.
Mm-hmm.
I think if it hadn't ended with that, I would have basically imagined that scene.
Yeah.
And I also liked that when you had Makiya walking away with the merchant who is still around.
Yeah.
It was sort of a hopeful note. Like, you got the sense that she was still dedicated to forming connections with humans.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the merchant had a lot about that. I forget what he said, but it was something.
I think that might have been what clued me off to the elder thing. I think it might have been something like, oh, like if the elder could see you now.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, he did say that. You're right. He said if she could see you now, she would laugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I like that we got the information that Makiya is basically okay and
mm-hmm.
didn't just retreat to the Eor village and mourn this experience forever.
Yeah. And actually, on that subject, did you guys stay for the after credits image?
Yes. I had
you
to.
You gotta.
Mm-hmm.
Who the fuck walks out on the credits, man? Just about everyone, maybe.
That was, well, I think that's on the subject of confirming that Makia continues to go on and like have relationships with people. It doesn't necessarily indicate Makia specifically, but there were people in the image that were not blonde hair. They were not like Eorfs. So it kind of shows that they keep going on and they're not just living isolated anymore the same way they used to. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although
yeah.
You don't,
it was really nice. Oh, go ahead.
You don't get to find out what Lily is up to at the end.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. It's kind of sad, but oh well.
I mean, you just kind of have to assume she'd be doing a lot better than she would, was in the movie. So I mean,
she can fly now, so...
She can fly.
Yeah, maybe the dragon stayed alive too.
Yeah, it was in that image, so I think it did. And actually, I had written down towards the beginning that I wanted to talk about the dragons. Even how did you guys feel about the dragons, their relationship with Mezart, like the whole red eye thing?
I thought the dragons were pretty tragic. I like the part that they didn't fly away, the part that they, like, yeah, it was just tragic, and it really helped the way we are part of the story so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much.
Like, they kind of they're pretty heavy-handed with it, but the implication
yeah,
is that... yeah, that they're right.
It was a lot sometimes with the, like, Lelia is a dragon. They're the same.
Yeah, they were definitely heavy-handed. And the other thing, too, is they were like, oh, yeah, they have this red eye disease. And I was like, oh, this is totally, like... Lelia talks about it. She's just like, you don't leave, but your emotions are burning you up on the inside. And so there's kind of this very, very blatant implication that the red eye is something that is a result of their captivity. Which I think was confirmed, too, by that last visual. Because it doesn't sound like that last dragon... died, at least not anytime soon after escaping.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably sounds like a good note to end this podcast on.
Yeah, that probably is a good point, because we're actually at a good amount of time, too. So, so this has been our brief, not so brief, whatever, about an hour and 7 minutes, so at least normal sized, I guess. But just for talking about one movie, decent amount of time. We had a good talk about Makia, so thank you guys again for coming on. We had myself along with Mori, Rock, and Shade. And we will see you guys on the next Anite podcast. And if you haven't seen Makia and you ever have a way to do so, I highly recommend it. If you have seen...
Watch it. Please, watch.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, we recommend this movie.
You've listened to an hour of spoilers. No.
but
seriously.
please, someone release it on Blu-ray. Please, someone release it on Blu-ray. I want to buy it.
Yes.
All right, but yep, and we will see you guys next time. So tune in. Feel free to shoot us some comments about your opinions on Makia. If you have seen the movie, or if you haven't seen the movie, you can tell us that we're idiots anyways. I don't know. And yeah.